Hi, my name's Jonathan Harden, and this is Series 2 of the Honest Actors Podcast, sponsored by TodayTix. If you want great offers on theatre tickets, access to day seats on your mobile, and exclusive front row lotteries, you need TodayTix, the ticketing app that lets you see theatre differently. To get tickets with no queues and no fuss, download TodayTix now on the App Store and Google Play. And now it's time to share with you, at long last, Episode 5 with Billy Carter. Start you off on an easy one, Billy. Well, before I do anything, I'll say thanks very much for agreeing to do it in the first place. You are my first expat, as it were. You're my first outside of the UK interview. While you're, I imagine, swanning around your apartment block in New York, I am sat on the staircase into our cellar in Streatham. And there...
Lovely.
There is the disparity between our two worlds. So to get us started, how did you first get into acting?
Well, when I was very, very young, from the age of 7 or 8, I think, and I used to do a lot of skits and stuff, and we would go around old RUC buildings and Orange Halls and psychotic hospitals, and then I joined the Lyric Youth Theatre in Belfast, and then I just kept looking at local drama groups like Bangor Operatic and Bangor Drama Group, and I wasn't terribly academic at school at all, and so the acting was the thing that I could do, and I really enjoyed that. And when I did GCSE drama, I went to an old boys school and they didn't have a drama department. So they sent me off to the girls' school.
Right.
So when all the fellas were doing sports, I was prancing around the girls' school doing GCSE drama, which I failed. And then I worked a little bit. I left school at 16. And somebody just said to me, I think you should go to drama school in London or England. And I went to Guildford School of Acting. And I could really only afford one flight over, and they offered me a place there and then. So it seemed to be. I was active very early on. I kind of knew this was knew that I could really do something like this.
So going back then, do you have a particular memory of a first time on stage?
Well, I used to, when I was even younger, I would, like, at school on a Friday, kind of entertain, do, like, impersonations of Elvis Presley. And I used to do Bobby Ball. But I just remember stillness. I remember I love making people laugh. And I think that was the first hearing a crowd laugh, I have to say. It sounds all very romantic, but I remember it very clearly. With hushed tones as well, I quite enjoyed.
And did you have, at that age, did you have a sense that this was something that could go on to be a career? You've referenced somebody saying to you much later that you should go to drama school in England. But at that age, was it just a bit of fun, or was it something you thought, I want to be an actor?
It was a bit of fun, but I think there was, I had a little comedy partner saying that you take it more serious than I do, and I always was always working at it, and I'm kind of quietly obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And as I say, I wasn't academic at school, and I kind of feel it was when I grew up a little bit, I thought, oh, this actually might take it out of here too, actually,
And was it an important part of it? Was the idea of getting out of Bangor or getting out of Northern Ireland,
Well, the plan was always to go back to Northern Ireland, and I was in London when I moved up to London when I was 22, 23, after I graduated from Guildford. Now, I had trained in 3 years of musical theatre, but my first job was at the Royal Court, playing this psychotic guy who got sex and violence mixed up, and everybody thought I was this really intense, broody actor, but I really just wanted to be in Cats, and I didn't have the heart to tell anybody, so I just went I went along with it for ages, but my plan was to go back home and I don't know. You know, London was is a very attractive place, and it was looking after me. And I thought, no, you know, I'll go home later. You know, but then I stayed for 20 years, and then I moved to New York.
So you're a teenager in Bangor, in Northern Ireland. You are, as you said yourself, not academic. You failed even your drama GCSE.
Yes, yeah, I failed that. I got a D.
Did you have the support of your family? I mean, did they get behind this notion that you were a performer, or was that something you battled with them over?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's funny, when I left school, I mean, on the Friday there was an application form to start the factory. Monday. I mean, it sounded like the 60s, but it was true. Or get a shop, or go to a shop and work.
Yeah.
So I did that for a bit, and I used to do a little, you know, the acting thing was always there. And even though I failed my GCSE drama, I practically could do it, but to sit down and explain it or draw diagrams about it, I couldn't do.
Yeah.
Wasn't that interested. And then, so regarding, yes, I had great backing from my family, and I think that they saw a passion, and I think my parents, I don't come from an acting family, it's funny actually, it's been quite an odd journey, they absolutely are really proud of me and support me through all these years, but I realized that they only see the finished product. So yeah. They still don't quite understand it. They only see what that 2 hours of me showing off on stage, or prancing about, or that takes 6 months to film, which takes 2 hours to watch. So they have no idea what the work or the mechanics that go into something now, you know, which is fine, which is I like actually, you know. But they've always been very, very supportive, and I think that's been a great thing for any. Doing something like this is to have that support and understanding. I do edit certain things out when I talk about, you know, they don't see the lows really. They see the result, and they see, you know, what they see as a wee bit of success or whatever, you know.
So talking about successes then, you know, if you were to pick out one highlight from your career, what's the thing you're most proud of?
You know, there's ones that I've really... It's ones that I really bonded lifetime friendships with, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's not the big smoker. It's not the big. It's ones that I can go, God, I met those people then, and we've all carried each other since then. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think those would be the jobs that I would put in my back pocket.
An agent once told me, and this is something, this is going to be one of those moments in the interview when people who listen are going to go, he's asking that question again. An agent once told me, and the agent shall remain nameless as they have been thus far, that an actor's only ever happy for the 5 minutes after they get the phone call telling them they've got a job. But from the 6th minute onwards, they start to doubt themselves ability to do the job. Do you... recognize any of that in yourself? And if you don't, from the 6th minute, what type of things do you start to play on your mind?
No, I can dine out on that for a long time, more than 6 minutes. To be honest, I am delighted with myself. It carries you through, particularly, it depends what you've been coming from. If you've been in the dregs, you know,
yeah,
and you've had nothing on the horizon, you know, that's different. But if I think, you know, I do lock myself into the job then after that, you know, and it gets me, you know, a different skin on me. And but I don't kind of doubt too much after I get that call or anything, you know. Also, I don't like that attitude with agents. I've worked in an agent's office for a little bit, and I couldn't bear, to be honest, the way they spoke about actors and how they saw us. It's pretty stupid.
What did you learn from that experience, if anything, that helped you then dealing with the agents subsequently?
Agents have we give them that permission that they have all the answers.
Yeah.
And they know they're slightly ahead of you in the game. We're the ones who are doing it. we know the mechanics of all that. But some agents who are surprise me are not actor friendly.
Yeah.
Also, some actors are a pain in the hole. And also the how the office shares the celebration of another actor's, you know, getting the job. It's brilliant for an agent to be able to, you know, confirm something. But I did see some people kind of put the phone down and just the eyes are rolled towards the heavens, where a poor actor's just been asking on a Monday, is there any jobs coming up, you know? And the amount of stuff that came in for headshots and, you know, people asking for representation and a list of, you know, 50 on a daily basis would just go straight into a bin.
So what other things then? What other things, I mean, have you done? I think we've all done. There's a certain checklist almost that actors have done. But what kind of things have you done in between jobs to stay sane, to pay the bills, to get out of the house, to meet people?
Yeah.
What kind of things do you do?
I've been very bad at this, and I think I could have had an easier ride with it, having had to, you know, develop another skill. I've done years ago like a call center, but these things only last for like a week for me, because then I just panic. I get tight chested, and I just leave. But I when I'm not working, I was given a very small bit of advice, was just to keep fit, you know, mentally and physically. So you have to be kind of twice as fit when you're not working.
Yeah.
But I mean, I have no skills apart from this bloody job.
If, you know, if the time comes in between work and you haven't been working for a while.
There's plenty of it, yeah.
Yeah. So what is, I mean, a personal question, what's the longest you remember going without an acting job?
Eight months.
And that 8 months, does that ever feel like it's the end of your career? Does it feel like, oh God, this, it's past?
Yeah, it was the long, I mean, that was the longest period without even like a day's filming or something, that you could break it up a little bit, but it was like 8 months of nothingness. And I had just come back from New York originally, that was 2007. I just lived in this bubble for ages. I was doing a show from the Old Vic, and we were on Broadway, and it was massive. And I came back, and I could not get arrested. And it went so long, I got numb, and I couldn't even get out of the house. I find myself the smallest of things were such an effort, you know. And I would say, and I was going up for things, but I think I was absolutely out of shape in the sense of just how I conducted myself. There was a quiet smell about me.
Yeah.
And it's a thing that I'm very aware of. And I think it doesn't matter how many years since that's passed, you still got a little scratch on it. And, you know, you still, of course, you get panic stricken a little bit. And we live very close to the wire, of course. And maybe the older I've got, I've tested my, you know, equipment on that. I now have a partner who's in the business as well, so we lean on each other an awful lot, which I used to do that quite on my own, which is a very different thing. So there was plenty of time howling at the moon. But now I try to keep it as simple as possible, but I have still developed no skills.
I mean, having a partner obviously is part of it, but has being unemployed gotten easier with time, do you think, as you develop those coping mechanisms?
Yeah, I remember kind of being in shock the first couple of times being unemployed, because...
Well, you'd started in the Royal Court, of course. You'd set yourself up.
Yeah, and things were, you know, really singing along gorgeously. And I didn't plan that. It was great. Then just nothing happened for ages.
Do you remember the job that ended that 8 months? Do you remember the call?
Yes, it was. I do. I remember the call, and I remember shaking. I think I was that bad. And it was a shocking play, but I needed the work. And if I met the director in New York recently, who came over and apologized. but we both needed the work.
You've said there that you know that you've been through these periods that are difficult, and you carry that with you. You carry those experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you then get into the job that ends those moments, do you think that those experiences carry, say, into a rehearsal period? I mean, did that job that ended 8 months, did any of those moments of anxiety and angst and possibly negativity as well, did you carry any of those into the rehearsal room, or did that just dissolve, I mean, as soon as the call came?
No, they didn't quite dissolve, because, as I say, there was a bit of a smell about it, so it lingered. It lingered a little bit, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But they're quickly, you can shake them off, but they're always present, really, a little bit. They're always kind of on my shoulders, you know.
Buy tickets to the best theatre in London the new way. With the TodayTix app, getting great offers and access to exclusive tickets has never been easier. With TodayTix Rush, you won't have to queue at the box office for hours to get day seats, and you can access big savings with their lotteries for shows like Kinky Boots and The Bodyguard. Download TodayTix, the theatre ticket app, from the App Store and Google Play, and see theatre differently. Do you know when auditions have gone well?
I know. I would say the majority of my stuff, I know that. It sounds very arrogant. I don't know if it does, but there's many of us that I've got that. But then, you know, you can only bring yourself to the table, and then there's parts that I've been up for, and I thought, God, that was brilliant. You see it on TV, and it's, you know, a 60-year-old man playing it.
Yeah.
So that they you know, what your talent, you know, what we have to work with and what we bring ourselves to the table, there's so many loops to go through to get you that part. And so I try not to be hard on myself to go, I fucked that up. But I think there's so many, you know, the scripts change or the characters change or whatever, or you're pairing somebody else up, or, you know.
Have you ever then, at any moment in that 8 months or since or before, you taken a piss there?
No, I just got this lovely water. I'm just pissing out the window there. I'm on the 30th floor.
I was going to ask you, take your time there. Pour the water. Let's get that out of the way.
I've got it.
It sounded great, actually.
Thanks.
You pour well. So I was just going to ask then, in those, you know, periods where it hasn't been going so well, and God knows you have, of course, had your fair share of highs, and like you say, a lot of jobs to be proud of. But at any point, have you even toyed with the idea of giving up and doing something else?
Yeah, it didn't last very long, of course. I mean, it was a moment of, you know, I just don't want to live like this anymore, in that sense. And I'd been at it for a few years, and I kind of looked around and I was going, I just felt floored by the whole experience. I also then hibernated for a bit, which is not good. You know, you move away from the acting community. It was just terrible. It was an awful time. But yeah, there was a very small bit I thought, what could I do? And then I look at it, I can't do anything else. I mean, I've got O-level woodwork.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. I might have, or retrain, or I thought, I'm quite envious of people who have, you know, their partner has, you know, a full-time job, and, you know, they have a routine, and they have, but I just accept that's just the way it is, and I'm quite happy with it now, you know. But I have, during that 8 months, and times in between that as well, where it's been a few months here and there, you know, you're still wrecking yourself, and I'm trying to keep as active within, you know, seeing things, seeing plays that inspire me and stuff. But I mean, there's a lot of moments of sweat, you know, because you just don't know, is it going to be another 9 months or 8 months?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard a brilliant actor that 2 years out. It terrifies me sometimes. And then, of course, then the money's not terribly good, particularly if you're a theatre man and doing theatre stuff. And there's no change from the US, certainly in New York. I mean, doing off Broadway stuff for, I mean, money's pretty shocking.
Yeah.
So that's always, and it's financial for me, always in my head. It's always, I've made a bit of money in the past, and I'm amazed that I've been able to keep things going. Yeah.
Is that the most difficult thing about being an actor, do you think? Is the financial insecurity?
Of course it is. And you talk about that, your agent phones and it's 5 minutes, that's the job. And then maybe it's that, 6 minutes that you do sit down and you have to do the sums.
Have you had close friends who've taken that leap and gone into something else later in life where they just went, I've had enough? Have you had many friends who've done that?
I had a couple of friends earlier on, I have to say, who did that. And they have brilliant jobs now. But the most important thing is that they found contentment within them. And I think there's a period of struggle. And I don't think it takes... I think it takes a big person to change careers like this.
Oh, yeah.
I don't see it as a failure. I said, I can't... I take my hat off to you, man. Shifted ground so much. And I know actors who changed 20 years ago who still cry that they can't get on. They still want to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they never find that happiness. But it just wasn't... They weren't able to, for various reasons, it just wasn't going to work for them. But you see them struggle even maybe 20 years down the line. I had a friend who was really struggling for years in himself with acting. And I said to him, Maybe you need to kind of give it up. Now, I regret that because it's not my place to ask anyone or tell anybody to give anything up. But I was trying. I could see it really take an effect on him. You know what I mean? And you're constantly reminded. It's sort of in our business. Who's doing really well? I remember going. There was one day, and I went down the tube. I saw a couple of my peers. These big posters, and then I got up, and they were on the bus, and they were on billboards everywhere, and I wanted to run.
You've been doing this, as you've already said, for a long time. One way or another, you've been performing since a very young age. Has performance or has acting gotten easier with time? You talk a lot about your equipment. Has your equipment got more advanced as you've moved through your career, or do you still feel like you've got the same toolkit and occasionally it gets a bit rusty?
No, I think after a few years you've really tested it, and given the permission to really use it, I think you can just you can go on all cylinders a little more, and you can sustain it a little better, I think. And also just with the acting, but also just with you within the industry itself, the understanding of it, the placing of it, the whole self-discipline on it, focus, all those have got better through time. Also giving yourself a little easier ride as well, it's got a lot easier in time.
Do you think it's a difficult craft?
It gets a lot of respect, but I think a lot of people might abuse it a little bit, I respect actors so much, my fellow actors. I think to create it takes a lot to create. I think sometimes we just take it for granted, and that sometimes when I see, my peers, and I go, over to you, man, it's fantastic what you've been able to do, tap into.
Do you think
what I couldn't do?
Do you think it's important to give other actors those kind of honest praise and credit where it's due?
No, I give it when it's due, definitely, and I don't have, and I think it is important as a community to look out for each other and to encourage each other. And it may not, what the other person does may not be of your taste or whatever, but it's I think it is important that we don't get too quiet about that. I think it's a brilliant thing. It's a family as well. and to listen to each other. And this is what I love about this podcast as well. I think it's really important, and I'm surprised it hasn't been done before, really, that we share things. And then, but I also, it's so easy to criticize as well. I mean, and that can be a little bit of a curse in it. And we think we can get a free rein on that. And I don't think it really, but I try to avoid that as much as possible. But I do love watching actors excel in that, because I know what they've done to put the work in. You know, and sometimes it comes overnight with a lot of people. Sometimes it gets so easy for them. You think, you know, the speed of their progression is gone. But I love actors who've kind of really simmered, put the work in, and but I think it's that type of career that I'd be really happy with, but that you're not that big household name and you're not the big A-lister, but you can go from the theatre world to television, film, either the US or the UK or Ireland, and you don't need to be fed the big product all the time. And you know, and as long as you have, and you have respect amongst your peers, and you know, I think that, and you make a living out of it, then I'd be happy.
So is that how you define success then? Are those the very simple terms that, you know?
I think so, yeah. I don't need fame or anything.
Have you ever wanted fame? Have you ever, did a younger Billy...
Maybe quietly at the beginning, I think, yes, but it definitely was nothing that I chase. I mean, the successes of the choice of your work, and I say respect from people you're working with and your peers in the community, and testing yourself, and yes, but making a living out of it, yeah, that to me is pretty good.
Has your definition of success changed in the same way as, say, that, like, that kind of possible desire for a little bit of fame? I mean, when you were coming out of GSA, what hopes and aspirations did you
have? Well, you kind of want that enough profile, enough that, you know, that you can get a chance at the better roles, and more so nowadays, unless that profile is there, you're not really going to get it. Doesn't matter how talented you are.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you don't have that profile, it's going to be a little tough, or somebody takes an incredible risk at you. But I don't see that happen often. Certainly over here, I think, you know. But fame's not, has never been really anything. But I do, you know, it's that thing of giving yourself a profile within the industry, I think.
Yeah.
You know. But to sustain fame, God, I don't envy that.
If you could go back to that young guy coming out of GSA, moving up to London at 22 or 23, and give him some advice, somehow meet him in a kind of quantum leap moment in a bar somewhere in London, and you could just have a quiet word in his ear, what pearls of wisdom would you offer him with the benefit,
of
hindsight?
I would say you're going to be all right, and just keep a sense of humour about it, and keep fit. I think that would be, I mean, there's no big secret, is there, really?
No.
Really. You know? But it's just, the thing is, it's a lot, I think you can give yourself an easier ride, I think.
Yeah.
And learn a bloody skill.
I'm not going to put a number of years on this, because I don't think it's fair. But it's a little while since 23-year-old Billy moved up to London.
Yeah.
Have you noticed changes in the industry in that time? Have you noticed anything's changed? Or does it feel like the industry you're inhabiting now is a different one than the one you graduated into?
I don't see a great change, certainly, because I always wanted to do theatre, so that's always kind of stayed in itself. I think the speed of people want careers now is quite something. And the restrictions, I think, on a lot of younger actors, that if you fit into a box. That's where you're kept, you know. That's quite frightening, I think. The money hasn't changed since 1996 or whatever, but God, I found a check when I was moving from London, from the old Vic, or from the Royal Court, my first paycheck. And whatever, 10, no, this might be 10 years afterwards, and I think it went up like 15 quid.
So if I made you, King William of acting,
right?
And you were, you had, you know, control over everything to do with the industry, what would you change in order to make it better? What are the things that you, that frustrate you? Obviously, you know, theatre pay seems like it's one I can give.
Theatre pay, and I think lots of people, I don't know, I might be shooting myself in the foot here, but I do have a problem with people doing things for free and being asked to do things for free for no pay.
Yeah.
And I think if you can't afford to pay your actors, then maybe you don't get to make art.
Yeah.
I get so annoyed at that. And I would find a way that an actor's wage could sustain their homes, have a decent standard of living, with, and take the fear out of their lives. I mean, it's been like this for many years, of course, and it's been well documented, but I think that there's something about giving just a better standard of living within the industry. You know, I mean, I think it is, well, you actually talk about change, I have to say, I do see it as a lot of people are treating it as a semi-professional industry now. You can't do it just doing the acting. But I agree with Tom, you just have to keep working. You know, and then there's times where you just get into that pool, and that's great, and that pays you very well. But there was times, particularly television, I had a couple of series out in like late 90s and early 2000s, and you could just take the rest of the year off.
Finally, bonus question, are you in anything at the minute?
I am, actually, Jonathan, thank God.
And that's it for another fortnight. Please, if you've enjoyed this episode or any of the previous episodes, this series or last, leave a rating and a review on iTunes if you haven't done so already. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter at Honest Actors. You can like the podcast page on facebook.com/honestactors. And on the website, inanything.com, there are loads of blogs on topics similar to those being discussed in the podcast interviews. Also, loads of other topics covered as well, and hopefully some fresh content going up soon. I have been rather busy, as some of you will be aware, trying to run a crowdfunding campaign. So, if you'd like to help with that, you can find out more information at BelfastBoxingFilm.com. That's it from me. Time to fade up the music. Okay, so at this point, what would have happened is I would be saying the names of listeners who had gone to BelfastBoxingFilm.com and signed up for a perk that was described as having your name mentioned in the podcast. But as no one took me up on that offer, I will just gently rock back and forth and say my own name over and over again until probably the next episode rolls around. Jonathan Harden. Jonathan Harden. Jonathan Harden. Jonathan Harden. Jonathan Harden, 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 Jonathan Harden. Stop the madness. BelfastBoxingFilm.com. Jonathan Harden, 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 Jonathan. Jonathan Harden, Jonathan Harden.